Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a discussion about who is winning the debt debate. Lawrence Jacobs, Director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the University of Minnesota, joins us to assess who is winning from the political brinkmanship in Washington that has our already weak economy being held hostage to a threat of economic collapse unless political demands are met. Then we'll examine further the two Americas, the 99% majority of us who are trying to get by and the 1% of millionaires and billionaires whose privileges the Republicans are prepared to fight to the bitter end to protect, even if it means destroying the economy. Sam Pizzagatti joins us to talk about whether our democracy has become a plutocracy. He is the author of the online newsletter Too Much and has an article at alternet.com. Plutocracy. If corporations and the rich paid 1960s level taxes, the debt would vanish. Then we'll hear from John Hanrahan, the former executive director of the Fund for Investigative Journalism. With an environmental activist just being sentenced to 2 years in jail for protesting global warming, we'll discuss John's article on the Nieman watchdog. At least 1,400 arrests for anti-war dissent, but who's counting? Not the press. Then finally, Larry Beinhart joins us. He wrote Wag the Dog, that became a classic movie, and Salvation Boulevard, just out in paperback, with a movie version of it in the theaters. We'll talk about religious intolerance that leads to violence, a subject in the news, and the subtext of Salvation Boulevard, a thriller in which a born-again Christian privatized faith is shaken to the core when he takes the case of a Muslim student suspected of killing his atheist professor. Joining us now is Lawrence Jacobs, who's the Walter F. and Joan Mondale Chair for Political Studies at the University of Minnesota, where he also directs the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert H. Humphrey School of Political Affairs. His books include The Unsustainable American State, Talking Together, Public Deliberation in America and the Search for Community, and Class War, Economic Inequality and the American Dream. He has an article out now on CNN.com called Who's Winning the Debt Debate? Welcome to Background Briefing, Lawrence Jacobs.
Good to be with you.
Could you answer that question, who's winning the debt debate?
I would say the Republicans are losing it. You look at the polls and it shows that there's almost 6 out of 10 Americans who would like to see a combination of spending cuts and some kind of new revenue coming in. And that includes 65% of the swing voters among independents. So it seems to be a pretty decisive verdict at this point against Republicans.
Well, my feeling, though, is, Lawrence Jacobs, that those figures would be even more in the Democrats' favor if we didn't have this convention in the American press for the so-called balance, the pro-con arguments, and then the thesis, antithesis, synthesis. The idea that everything is equal and opposite. In the universe of discourse, everything is black and white. And frankly, to me, there is no proportionality in this debate. It is clear that one side is threatening the full faith and credit of the United States. They're threatening to destroy that if they don't get 100% of their way. And I think that because of this press convention, people are getting both sides of it, which, frankly, there aren't both sides of this. This is pure extortion.
Well, I think you're right and wrong at the same time. I don't think that the media can be blamed for this alone. After all, we just had President Obama on national television stating what he's been stating publicly for several weeks now, that he favors an approach that would include both spending cuts and some kind of new revenue, and that he welcomes the effort, including from Speaker Boehner in the House, to build that sort of kind of more moderate centrist approach. But you're right that Americans are pretty harsh in their views about how Republicans are behaving. There's been a growing number now up above 60% who say that the Republicans are behaving irresponsibly with regard to the debt ceiling, while a majority, a small majority, give Democrats credit for acting responsibly. So I think the Americans are getting what's going on in Washington, and part of this balancing is, frankly, part of what President Obama's been up to.
Well, but Lawrence Jacobs, this has never happened before. This has been a routine thing, this debt ceiling that Republicans and Democratic presidents alike have routinely passed. You know, obviously we know that Senator Obama voted against it, but it's never become an issue until the Republicans decided to make it an issue. So surely this is a deliberate act on their part to essentially hold hostage the economy of the United States and by extension the world.
And I think the Republicans are taking a beating for it in the court of public opinion. you know, you kind of look out to the 2012 election, and if the economy continues to struggle, it's a good chance Barack Obama could well lose his reelection battle. But if the Republicans continue on this course, where they are acting in a way that Americans see as irresponsible and don't trust them on a whole lot of issues, including Medicare, then they may actually snatch defeat from the mouth of victory.
So do you think, though, that, I mean, we don't know where this showdown is heading. A lot of talk now about the president invoking the 14th Amendment, and I assume that that's becoming more and more likely. It would, of course, result in an immediate challenge, and it's hard to know how quickly it would get to the Supreme Court and how this very conservative Supreme Court would rule on that. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's something that President Obama has got to be very careful with. The key thing to remember on these prerogative imperial powers exercised by presidents is you can have a president who may be entirely well-meaning in exercising those powers, and this may be that situation, but they can be used for very different means sometime down the road. We had an experience with that with Richard Nixon, who had used the prerogatives of the presidency that had been building up over Democratic and Republican administrations to engage in things like an extensive cover-up of his role in the Watergate break-in and other sorts of areas of illegality or unconstitutional conduct. So I think this is a very grave step, and I think it's been pretty clear all along that the White House would much prefer to have the normal legislative process work, and politically, it would ensure that Republicans were on board with the solution rather than the president alone taking this extraordinary action and then being the sole holder of the blame and the uproar that will result.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Lawrence Jacobs, who's the director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the University of Minnesota. He has an article out on CNN.com called Who's Winning the Debt Debate? But of course, the easier said than done, surely, Lawrence Jacobs. So far, there's no indication that there's any flexibility, and it seems that every time Boehner makes any kind of agreement with the president behind closed doors, he has to repudiate it the minute he gets back and gets screamed at by the Tea Party caucus. And now his own bill now has to be redrawn. And the president's already saying he's going to veto that. So what leads you to think that there may be a legislative solution before Obama has to invoke the 14th Amendment?
If you think about this as a baseball game with nine innings, we're somewhere near the top of the seventh inning. There is a whole lot of time left, and there will be two to three different developments between now and Monday. And we may actually even have a bit more time after August 2nd. So I think there's going to be quite a bit of action in the legislature. I think Speaker Boehner will pass something, then we'll see a counterproposal from the Senate Democrats and the leader there, Harry Reid, and it'll go back and forth. So we're far from the end of this. This will be, I think, you know, a nail-biter. The stakes are obviously very high, and the country is already suffering, I think, some significant costs. But I do think that the Congress and the president will be able to work things out.
Well, when you say, Lawrence Jacob, the country is suffering from a cost, I would think that already the signal that's being sent to the global markets about the U.S. economy is, in effect, don't buy our tea bill. Now, maybe the Tea Party fundamentalists don't care. In fact, that may well be their agenda, not to borrow anymore. But in the real world, it would seem to me that a default would be a catastrophe, but even a threat of default seems to have rattled the global markets.
Well, we're seeing that already in the last couple of days. The stock market has taken, you know, not a steep nosedive, but certainly it's going down sharply. And we may well start to see interest rates going up, U.S. treasuries, but also on interest rates for businesses. So we will feel the cost of this, I think, for some time. And it won't be just on the default option. It'll be kind of on a close call, because we're going to find that the credit rating agencies are going to downgrade the certainty of being repaid by the United States of America. This is really quite extraordinary.
Well, but surely, just in terms of where we are as an economy, and obviously economics have been overwhelmed by politics, but the economic reality is that we're still trying to recover from a recession. We have huge unemployment. We have a lot of uncertainty, meaning that the banks and corporate America are sitting on a lot of money that they're not prepared to invest. And all of this is a millstone around the president and the Democrats' neck. So how cynical can one be about this? That, you know, when you have people like Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, saying his number one priority is to just defeat Obama and make sure he doesn't get a second term, has the economy become a part of that strategy?
Well, I think the Republicans are not doing as much as they might to boost the economy. And I think if you had a Republican president, and you probably see the tax cuts that President Obama and Democrats have been talking about, you would have seen those approved. But let's be clear. What is going on right now with the battle over the debt limit is extraordinary. And it is something that Republican leaders, including Mitch McConnell in the Senate, and the closest business allies to the Republican Party are alarmed about and see as very much against their own interests. As I mentioned before, you've got 63% of Americans now thinking that the Republican Party can't be trusted to manage our debt. That is just a very bad situation, and I think the smart heads in the Republican Party might well have some confidence that they could win the 2012 presidential election, except if the party becomes defined as irresponsible and unable to manage the economy.
And in terms of the internal wranglings amongst Republicans, who would you suggest has the ascendancy here? Because it would seem to me the dividing line is between the kind of Tea Party libertarian wing funded by the Koch brothers and others, and then the more traditional Republican, Main Street Republicans, who are obviously getting a lot of phone calls from corporate America, right?
Yeah, I think that is the split. I think there's a kind of the traditional business wing of the Republican Party that used to be the dominant wing, and this insurgency that's partly libertarian, it's also partly, frankly, isolationist. And what I hear in some of the opposition to raising the debt limit is unwillingness to participate in the international financial markets. Now, I think those of us who know something about that realize that is a very dangerous game to play, because these markets have no friends, they have no country, and if they turn on the United States, every American will suffer.
But if that happens, won't that be a Pyrrhic victory for the president? The Republicans will be blamed in the short term, but he'll be running on a devastated economy in 2012, and people have short memories.
Well, I think that's too cynical. I think this sort of thing will be kind of a branding opportunity for the Republican Party. If you want to go back to the Great Depression, I think most people will think of it as the Hoover Depression. If the Republican Party holds up and blocks a raising of a debt limit, and then the country as a result goes into a steep economic decline and a double dip on the recession, that will hurt them tremendously, much more so than the president. I think at this point, the Republicans' best shot for winning the White House is to stay out of the way and not be seen as literally putting their fingerprints on economic decline. They want the president to take that blame. But as we're seeing in many, many polls that are coming out in the last few days, the Republicans are actually starting to be blamed for the fiscal condition of the country and for being seen as obstinate and threatening the country's well-being. That is, from a Republican point of view, a very bad spot to be in.
And Lawrence Jacobs, do you think that the central argument that the president made in his recent speech, which was followed then by Boehner's speech, and they, again, to my mind, they were kind of given equal time, but an equal emphasis by the press. But that aside, do you think that the central argument about economic fairness, about the disparity of wealth, the growing disparity of wealth in this country, the notion that the middle class and the working Americans are bearing the brunt, and that the wealthy, the millionaires and billionaires, who the Tea Party caucus seem to be zealously protecting the prerogatives of these people who have done so well over the last decades, do you think that's resonating?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're seeing quite a bit of support among Americans for the kind of approach the president's talked about, taking away some of the tax break for the super rich hedge fund managers, looking to take away tax credits for, say, private jets for business, and on down the list. I mean, this is a very effective line of argument, and certainly at a time when so many Americans are out of work and struggling to pay their bills, the Republicans find themselves on the wrong side of the argument here and are very much being identified with defending the rich. And I think the president is pretty effective in that argument. There are other parts of that speech I thought were not as effective, though.
Like what?
Well, I thought his emphasis on the dysfunction of government and the need for extensive cuts, including in Social Security and Medicare, gave away a lot of ground. And it's not clear that he gets much help from that in a bargaining situation. You go back and you look at the way Ronald Reagan used to bargain with a Democratic Congress. He gave no ground at all. He took a very strong position and then fight it out. And at the end of the day, then he would, you know, cut a deal. This president seems to like to make the concessions up front and then engage in bargaining. And that's just not, I think, a very effective approach.
Well, the rationale for that, of course, is that he's trying to reach out to the center and look like the only adult in the room. But do you think that reaching out to the center is mutually exclusive in terms of alienating the progressives and the left, who are already pretty jaundiced about this administration?
The left and progressives at the end of the day, will vote for Barack Obama. And I think what's going on in the House of Representatives is, or should be, instructional as to what would happen if Obama's not reelected in terms of their perspective. But I think independence can be approached in a lot of ways. But I think, you know, playing up the dysfunction of government doesn't really help the president's hand when he's trying to defend government, particularly in the areas of Social Security and Medicare. He's undermining his own case.
Well, I thank you for joining us. And I think a lot of people feel that way and wonder why all of this stuff has been put on the table. And even if it's, I suppose, in many ways, the worst thing that could happen is the Republicans suddenly gain some sanity and accept these generous offers from him.
Well, this is what a lot of longtime Republican conservatives have been saying, particularly the deal that John Boehner apparently had cut with the president was going to have about four times more cuts than new revenue, including cuts in Social Security and Medicare. That would have been a landmark and could have been seen by progressives or liberals as a big setback. But the right wing of the Republican Party scuttled it. And there are, again, the veteran Republican conservatives who feel like that was a big mistake, that they had a tremendous win there and should have taken it.
But it leaves progressives wondering how this president feels about the very pillars of the Democratic Party and its legacy.
This is a complicated president. I think he has, in some respects, quite accommodative of Republicans, but also of the business sector. But I think when you look at the health reform, and particularly its really quite significant redistributive features, the financial reform and the new regulatory structure it creates, and the new approach that he's creating towards direct lending for higher education, he may well be the most progressive president since Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the 1930s.
So you said he's the most progressive president?
Yeah. I mean, again, just take a look at health reform alone. It's,
right.
It's a remarkable piece of legislation. I know there are a lot of progressives and liberals who, wish for a single-payer system.
Mm-hmm.
But that was never going to happen. It was not even close to happening because the votes weren't there in Congress. But the legislation he did pass puts a variety of new taxes on the affluent and on affluent businesses and health care providers, and it takes that money and it shifts it over to tens of millions of Americans who either lacked health insurance or had pretty inferior health insurance and medical coverage.
Well, it sounds like what you're saying here is that the president maybe talks right but governs left.
You know, if you look at the history of social welfare reform in America and frankly in other countries, it's always come with accommodation of stakeholders. And I think that's what Barack Obama has done. And he's also responded to the conditions on the ground when he's in office. And right now we have one of the most conservative ruling coalitions, United States House of Representatives, in a long time.
Well, I thank you for the conversation. And it's been very interesting. Lawrence Jacobs.
Good to be with you. Take care.
Again, I've been speaking with Lawrence Jacobs, who's the Walter F. and Joan Mondale Chair of Political Studies at the University of Minnesota, where he also directs the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the Hubert H. Humphrey School of Political Affairs. He has an article out on CNN.com called Who's Winning the Debt Debate? We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back in a moment.
I look at life from both sides now, from win and lose, and still somehow it's life's illusion. I recall, I really don't know life.